When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I need him to win above the rim, to off-target passes, passes by his knees, passes in traffic, passes where you're going to get blasted on the chin afterwards. That's just the nature of the tight end position. That is his best trait. His natural hands, plucking away from his body, protecting that ball, and adjusting the passes. That will be the most translatable skill set.
Friends, and welcome to this, another episode of the Underdog Football Show. My name is Josh Norris. So glad you can be here. Tremendous show ahead. The one and only Ben Fennell, hopefully you know him on Twitter. He does work with the NFL Network on their NFL Draft and Combine production. He's a producer for the Philadelphia Eagles, works for ESPN college football shows. I mean, he lives in the football lab. And the best thing that Ben does, so he has a great eye for these prospects, and he's able to put them in the context of the NFL already with different systems, different schemes, different roles, and how they can succeed best. It's a wonderful conversation on Kyle Pitts, the type of player he is, a few other tight ends, and then quote unquote, our guys, the secret superstars in this class that me, Ben, and Hayden really enjoyed watching and are going to track for the rest of their careers. Quickly, just want to tell you, actually I want to thank you. The support for the show has been amazing. If you continue to tell one friend, if we continue to get 50 new subs every single day, that would make me so happy. And also, we've got plenty of games over at Underdog Fantasy right now. Pick 'em for NBA and NHL and MLB. Rivals under Pick 'em as well. And absolutely, we still have pre-draft best ball going right now, both tournament and single entry. So if you want to use promo code Josh Norris, go and check out all of that out. The app is absolutely tremendous. All of you know that have played on it. And we have a YouTube channel. All of our videos, clips from this show, and then we do live streams. We just had one with Michael Leone, who's done fantastic work on best ball structure and strategy. So just search Underdog Fantasy on YouTube, and you should be able to find it there. All right, let's kick it to the interview again. Myself and Hayden Winks welcome Ben Fennell on. And there was only one way to start this conversation on the mythical Kyle Pitts. And I opened with a very simple question. What makes Kyle Pitts different?
Well, if you're trying to differentiate what he does differently from everybody else in the class, it's be the most dominant, consistent matchup weapon, you know, among all the receivers and tight ends. I think his ability to win at all three levels in the red zone, man coverage, zone coverage, catch adjustments, be a physical specimen while also being a very agile, nimble athlete as well, can just win in a variety of ways. And it's a matchup league. And if you're looking for a matchup nightmare, what better than the unicorn, which is different than everybody else. And there's a lot of defensive coordinators that say, if you have a unicorn, I have to guard you with a unicorn. And there's only so many unicorns to go around this world at the moment until we start manufacturing them in a lab. He's that one that just says, you're going to create the most problems for us when we're going up against opposing defenses.
So that might put him in perspective in this class, Ben, but we're also talking about perhaps a historic prospect in Kyle Pitts, maybe a top four selection, which has never happened at the tight end position. So what makes him different than previous great tight end prospects that we've talked about? I've talked about them with you, OJ Howard, TJ Hockenson. We can keep going on and on down the list. If he is truly going to be the highest one ever drafted, is it warranted and why?
Well, I don't think we need to look at it as a tight end, because then we're comparing him with traditional tight ends, and he isn't a traditional tight end. So comparing him to previous top 10 players like Eric Ebron's and Vernon Davis's and TJ Hockenson's most recently really isn't fair to any of them. He's a different type of player, and that's okay. And I think the conversation getting wrapped up in, well, is he a wide receiver? Is he a tight end? who cares? We're going to use him in the offense, all over the offense, like both positions. I'm not willing to say he's not a slot receiver. That's where he's going to be doing a lot of his work, as that move tight end, kind of work in the middle of the field and doing a lot of work from number three in trips and from that slot position. So I just don't think it's fair to compare him, because as a unicorn, there is no mold. And when you get into players with no mold, they become very contentious, become very divisive, and you have to figure out what mold do they fit. It's okay. They're productive football players. Can you find a use for them? There's a couple guys this class, and whether it's the Pitts or the Devonta Smiths of the world, we have to put them in buckets. We're so enamored with buckets rather than just saying he's different. He's unconventional, but it's going to work.
We've talked about that actually with a few other prospects. You mentioned Devonta Smith. I would throw out Rondale Moore of his body type and how he might be successful. Hayden, when you watch Kyle Pitts, when you look at his profile, both production-wise and athletic-wise, what do you see from Kyle Pitts?
My model is calling him the greatest tight end ever, and that goes back to 2005. And it's like not even close either. Like your Eric Ebrons, your Hawkinsons, your Noah Fants, all of those guys had really strong profiles as well. But Kyle Pitts is like well ahead of all of those guys in my model. He had the best adjusted production. And what's so crazy about that is obviously he's only going to be 20 years old on week one. He was doing that split out as against the SEC, like getting covered by like JC Horn. Like it's not like this is like just random schemed production against like a lower conference. Like Ben was saying, it's just a different breed. He's not like the other tight ends because he's such a good route runner. He has so much control over his body. He can win in the red zone with size. His arm length is insane, but he also is like nimble enough to like win on slants, and he can be split out wide. He can be like Travis Kelce is. He can be on a 3x1 set just out down the bottom. Like, what are you going to do with that? Who's going to be running over there? Is that going to be a corner? Is that going to be a safety? Is that going to be a linebacker? And like, that's why he's just different. And I understand the hesitancy about drafting tight ends this high in the draft. For example, like TJ Hawkinson, obviously a very good route runner and very handsy, but he was like a blocker, and like a blocking tight end only gets you so far. And it's much easier to find a blocking tight end than a Kyle Pitts. And that's why I just don't want to be putting him in those buckets that Ben's talking about. He's just totally different.
Yeah. Ben, let me continue that narrative, continue that storyline, because it's true. I mean, there have been a lot of young tight ends that can be productive early in their careers, but it seems like more than any other position, tight ends reach their peak, hit their stride, either with their second team or their second contract. I mean, you watch more detailed football than almost anyone that I know. Why do you think that is? And one, do you think it's true? Do you think it's fact? And if so, why does it take so long for this position to progress and to really figure out who these players are?
That's a great question. And I've kind of, made a collective assessment to saying football in general is a learn on the job sport. There isn't prodigies in this sport. You can't come right out of high school and be mature mentally and physically to compete in the NFL, in my opinion. Baseball and basketball, yes, you can. Football is different. So I think when you're just projecting and going through developmental curves, it's a learn on the job sport. And the tight end position particularly is such a hybrid usage as far as being in confined spaces at times, whether in line as an offensive lineman or work in the middle of the field. Suddenly those bodies you're bumping around from outside linebackers to safeties, the Mikes and Wills are completely different at the next level. The level of physicality is completely different. And it really is that much more of a learn on the job spot. And I feel like as you get closer to the proverbial ball, that center position from the outside in, it becomes that much more heightened, in my opinion. The corners and receivers, I could get production out of earlier and maybe less learning curve because of those kind of open spaces and allow them just to be God-given athletes. But as you get closer to that ball in the trenches, that's when the developmental curve, both mentally and physically, really come to a head. And that tight end position is not easy, for all those reasons kind of listed. And what we ask our tight ends to do in the NFL is not easy. So I think they sometimes have a little bit of work to do as far as being true NFL tight end assignment completers.
I mean, this is going to be too simple of a way to say it, but I've always thought that it's like the most difficult aspects of both positions. You know, like you basically have to have offensive line traits and mentality at times. And then you have to have wide receiver traits and mentality at times when you're isolated and have to win in one-on-one situations. And, you know, the line that we always hear with these athletic tight ends that we've seen in the past is that, well, they're just going to be too big for corners and safety, so they're going to be able to make contested catches over them. And then against linebackers, you know, they're just too quick, they're too fast, and they're too athletic, and they're going to separate. And that line, to me, is repeated more often than it actually comes into fruition. But it's absolutely true with Kyle Pitts. I mean, you see constantly, and as Hayden mentioned, against these SEC defensive backs, if he has the leverage advantage, if the quarterback even fails to use that leverage advantage, he can contort his body. He can control his body against those corners and safeties, inside, outside, flip his shoulders, come down with these 50-50 balls. And he does it regularly over the middle of the field, over the sideline. And Ben, what always stood out to me over the middle of the field is that, like, that's a danger area. I know the rules have kind of changed in terms of these hits that these pass catchers can take over the middle of the field, but he took a lot of them because he was forced to leave his feet. And then as soon as he made contact with the ball in his hands, he was taking big hits. And almost every single time he came down with the football. And that's just uncommon.
Well, Josh, and that's why I really believe my number one quality in this position is catching the football. And that's what Kyle Pitts does exceptionally well, and I think better than all of his other traits. I don't need him to run a 4-3 when I'm at the low red zone. I need him to win above the rim, to off-target passes, passes by his knees, passes in traffic, passes where you're going to get blasted on the chin afterwards. That's just the nature of the tight end position. That is his best trait. His natural hands, plucking away from his body, protecting that ball and adjusting the passes, that will be the most translatable skill set. I don't think he's going to run past people like he does right now. I don't think he's going to win contested situations like he does right now. But that's obviously, you know, everybody's big and fast in the NFL.
Right,
it's just kind of just a countering skill set. But he catches the football very easily, very naturally. That's what I like out of Kyle Pitts.
Hayden, what do we think about his possible fit with, let's say, the Atlanta Falcons there at number four? I mean, I looked this up. Arthur Smith ran the highest number of snaps of multiple tight end sets in the NFL last season. The only team that was close to him was Kevin Stefanski with the Cleveland Browns. We know last year with a different head coach, a different GM, they traded a second round pick for an older Hayden Hurst. But what do we think about pairing Kyle Pitts with the likes of Calvin Ridley, the likes of Julio Jones, and having them all win over the middle of the field or outside the numbers in a true Arthur Smith offense?
Well, if it's going to be the 12th personnel, he's going to be lining up in the slot where Russell Gage was lining up last year, and he would get all, I mean, how do you cover that much speed in one offense? I mean, you're winning vertically with Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones, and Kyle Pitts could stretch the seam as well. So that's what I'm rooting for. And I think that they need the last pass catcher, especially if they don't know what they're getting out of the running back position. Hayden Hurst kind of underperformed last year. Russell Gage is a very replaceable starting receiver as well. So I'm hoping that they go the Kyle Pitts route. And I'm guessing that Arthur Smith took this job wanting to win with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. They have like two or three more years. Obviously they're past their prime, but you can probably still win enough games. I would be surprised if Arthur Smith took this job and was like, yeah, we're going to suck for a couple of years. We'll draft like a Trey Lance or somebody else and like wait and like play the long game. I think they have enough talent on offense where if they just sprinkle in Kyle Pitts, like, all right, now we're really cooking. We'll figure out the defense on day two. So Kyle Pitts, I hope, is Atlanta.
Well, Hayden, my counter to that would be watching Arthur Smith the past couple of years in Tennessee. I've seen him generate explosive plays to Luke Stockers of the world.
That's true.
But how does Luke Stocker get on the field? By being a disguised tight end. You don't really know what he's doing on the field. He obviously is a more bona fide blocker. So looking for those two-way players and having really disguised intent, I think may suit that offense a little better. And I know people are thinking, well, Jonnu Smith was a very athletic option. He found ways to get the ball to as well. Jonnu was a pretty good blocker and more of an H-back, fullback type of blocker, which may be Kyle Pitts' role. But I think in order to fit into Arthur Smith's offense, you have to be a first and second down run player in order to tell the defenses, we don't really know what you're going to do with these players.
But I wouldn't constitute Kyle Pitts as a bad blocker. Like, I think he gives effort. I think he gets in position. You know, he's not someone who's just going to get overrun. But you're saying, like, if we're looking at the critical factors, he might not have the ones at the top of the list that someone like Arthur Smith is looking at.
Yeah, in my opinion, that's what makes guys like George Kittle such a dominant presence is two-way disguise. In that you just don't know how he's going to beat you. He's an A-minus blocker and an A-minus receiver. So does that mean would they like somebody more in the 255 range, the, you know, Freiermuths and Hunter Long type of roles with maybe a little bit more pure Y tight end, you know, skill set to fit into the offense and say, you know what, he's our every down tight end. And I think that's what people are figuring out with Kyle Pitts. Can he survive as a Y tight end? Is he just that second move tight end, that U guy that we're going to move out into the slot and some two tight end packages? And I completely agree with you, Josh. He's a dominant receiver, very serviceable blocker.
Yep.
You know, not a dominant blocker, but serviceable. What I love to say about these tight ends blocking, he loses slowly. And that's all you ask in tight end rooms. There's a team in the league where it says that in their room, says lose slowly. Because when you lose slowly, we have a chance. It's the guys that lose immediately that the play gets blown up and you get a negative. But Kyle Pitts, he loses slowly, very consistently, and I can work with that.
Well, now, Ben, I have to ask. I know you live in the football lab. So if you were to fantasize a possible place where Kyle Pitts could land in the NFL, and let's be somewhat reasonable here, but if you could project where his best fit might be, where his best usage could be, if it's not Atlanta, where might it be?
I don't think he's a player that really is that scheme specific. If you can't find a usage and a way to get production out of Kyle Pitts, that's definitely a you problem, not a him problem. So we can obviously talk about the number one tight end. He's going to be a top 10 pick. Somebody's going to be excited to get him in his, you know, at his offensive, you know, disposal and work him in his arsenal. I can envision him being productive in 32 different offenses.
Yeah.
Now it's a matter of what are you going to ask him to do? How much are we going to rely on him? Are you going to ask him to win and separate on every third down and make tough catches? Or are you going to help him out and scheme him open and make him a function of the run game and like we're seeing across the league? So I would love to see him not have too much pressure on his shoulders to always have to win for himself. You know, I would love to see him in a McVay scheme, Kyle Shanahan, LaFleur, where they do so much to help receivers uncover and then go be a weapon with the ball in your hand. So I could really kind of picture him with a number of different teams.
Hey, any closing thoughts here on Kyle Pitts before we move on to the rest of the position?
Well, I'm just curious, a guy that is this young and he's a little bit on the undersized. I mean, he's 240 pounds. So it's like your traditional NFL. Would you be expecting him to put on 10, 15 pounds over the next 4 years? Like, how many coaching staffs do you think want him to do that? Or are you always just going to be this 240 pound, like almost like an X receiver?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And we'll have to see kind of his body type and his tightness with adding, you know, too much weight. And do you lose some of that speed and explosiveness? But if they see his usage in the run game being a viable threat, moving him from that 240 range into the 250, maybe 255, could maybe make him a more serviceable early down player and then giving him more disguise to attack opposing defenses. I could make a case for him losing 10 pounds and send him to the receiver room. I could get just as much production, you know, out of there. So I think what the team is going to do with him and his projection forward will probably vary from team to team. But if you can't find a way to use a Kyle Pitts, go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, I mentioned this line in the Matt Waldman conversation, the episode before this one, but I just love it. Love it when there are outliers, when there are players that break the mold. And I just love that we're able to have this conversation this year because, Ben, it's never boring to talk to you, but I just love it every single year where we have new topics to talk about because it can kind of be recycled, it feels like, every draft season. And so something different like this is so much fun. And I mean, just the way that when he faces, you know, those linebackers where he like slow plays it, like he changes his pace and then boom, bursts and has that acceleration right past them. And he's just an absolute joy to watch. All right. Let's flesh out and build a board with the rest of this tight end position. Ben, how we're going to do that, and there's not going to be that many, so maybe we each give one name that we like and just to give our scouting report on them. Hayden, why don't you go first? Since we know that Kyle Pitts is going to be at the top of our board, who are you looking at in that next spot for us?
Yeah, I think there's a teardrop, obviously, and then it would go to Patrick Freiermuth. And his nickname's Baby Gronk. He's not nearly as fast to me or as physical as Gronk was, but I think that he's serviceable, and I think that he is somebody that you can probably disguise with a little bit. I mean, he was 60% in line in 2019. I heard an interview that he wants to be a move tight end, and that's what NFL teams are talking to him about. So I'm not sure what his size is ultimately going to come on to, but he is, I think, athletic enough. I think that he's a very sure-handed receiver. He is pretty productive. He had averaged 10.6 PPR points per game over his entire career, and he comes with 4-star pedigree. So I think that he is probably a high-floor starter. I'm not sure if he's going to have some massive ceiling, but I think that if you're just looking for a second round starting, probably like plus to average starting tight end, I think Freiermuth is the guy.
Ben, I'm old enough to remember Troy Nicholas out of Notre Dame receiving the Baby Gronk nickname. And I don't know if Troy Nicholas is even playing anymore, but Gronkowski still is. So I don't know what that says about these prospects with this title. I actually saw him more as that move option. And maybe that's just how Penn State used Freiermuth, but you know, they would run two tight end sets and he's the one off the line or on the move. I thought he was, you know, an above adequate athlete, a comfortable receiver who could kind of win his individual assignment. I didn't see anything special out of him that like really got me going on the edge of my seat, but he could be that solid type player who, you know, goes in the third round. And I like, you know, tight ends that are drafted in round 3 and round 4 more so typically than tight ends that spend first and second round draft capital on those.
Well, the second we see a young, doughy, white tight end that can contribute in the pass and the run, he gets the Baby Gronk label. It just is what it is. So we're already past that with Freiermuth, and I promise you there's 3 or 4 more in college football that are the new Baby Gronk. So we'll talk about them later, as 2022 is actually a pretty good group. But I did a really interesting study watching all Travis Kelce's receptions this past year.
Yeah.
And I was stunned at the lack of vertical separation of Travis Kelce. This guy did not run past anybody. But the interesting thing was, he wasn't asked to. Yet he broke this, you know, tight end receiving record. I don't know if it was yards or receptions. But how did he do it? Suddenness and strength at the top of the routes and catching everything. And when I went back and watched Pat Freiermuth, he did the same thing. That, you know what? He didn't run past people. But he had really good snap in and out of breaks, really soft hands, plays through contact extremely well, whether getting off the line at the collision point, which is where you typically meet a defender sitting there catching you, and at the catch point. That weird combination of urgent and patient, but catches everything. And I don't need him to be a blazer, and I don't need him to be this dynamic athlete, but he knows how to separate with nuance. And that's the same way Travis Kelce won. And I kind of changed my thought about Freiermuth coming into 2020, where I thought he was going to be this dominant wide tight end, as he flashed a little bit previously at Penn State as that move role. Thought maybe he'd add 5-10 pounds and really be that trench guy. I was a little underwhelmed with his blocking in 2020 and that much more impressed with his receiving ability. And when I kind of reflect on some of these guys that win very successfully in the NFL, whether it's the Greg Olsons or the Kelces and those guys that are dominant down the seam and in the middle of the field, doesn't always look great.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, Pat Freiermuth has a lot of Travis Kelce going on.
Interesting. Jaguars on day 2 could be an option for him, I think, because they're certainly in need at the position. All right. Why don't I go next? I hope our guest doesn't hate me for saying this, but Brevin Jordan, to me, is another example of how our eyes do lie to us. Because I loved Brevin Jordan when watching him. And I still like him as a prospect. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's legit used as a slot wide receiver. His movement is so good. Little wasted steps. And, you know, he cuts to explode upfield. And it's really enticing. He also gets after it. He's hyper competitive, especially, you know, Miami asked him to block on the outside on screens, and he would drive his guy to the sideline. I thought it was a little easy to say Jonnu Smith, but I couldn't help doing it when writing down my notes. And then Hayden, he goes and he does his athletic workouts and his athletic tests, and he comes out as a below average athlete, kind of in the mold of like an Irv Smith. And Irv Smith still went in the second round. And I don't know if Brevin Jordan can get there, because I think he also has some injury history. But he's one been that I thought was going to test extremely well, kind of be that next guy that gets the receiving juices going right behind Kyle Pitts. But then that athletic testing just gave me a little bit of caution, I should say, and maybe questioned what I saw and if he had that ceiling of what I gave him.
He was my number one player in the entire class that I said had the most to gain at his pro day.
Yeah.
Because if he somehow squeezed a 4.49 or even a low 4.5, he's, I think, a bona fide kind of top 40 player. Yeah. And now he's kind of swirling there in round three, round four, and figuring out, is he ahead or behind of guys like Freiermuth and Longs and some of those other next tier tight ends. But he, you hit it to, you know, to a T there. Very competitive, has the ability to stretch vertically, very competitive blocker, whether in line against defensive ends and pass pro, whether on the move as an H-back out in the perimeter. I just wish he was featured a little bit earlier at Miami. They got Rhett Lashley to come over from SMU, who got Kylan Granson all those yards for a couple of years. And they had some nice flashes of Brevin Jordan. But if he was in an offense that really featured him, like a Kyle Pitts, or even the way like they threw the ball to Hunter Long so much in Boston College, I think we would feel a little safer about his projection and kind of his fit at the next level. But Brevin Jordan was a guy that reminded me a lot of Randy McMichael, who is 6'3", 245. You know what Randy McMichael ran? 4.88. He was a faster player than 4.88 and had a very comfortable 10-year career in the NFL as a really dynamic kind of pass-catching tight end weapon. So Irv Smith, I can definitely see that. I don't know if he's quite the Charles Clay type of guy, but Jonnu Smith, you know, Charles Clay, Irv Smith, we're all in the right ballpark here.
Just to put some perspective on his pro day, he had the fourth worst three-cone time in my tight end database. And
ever?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have mine's not nearly as deep as other ones, but like we're talking like bottom five, bottom 10 percentile. And that's his three cone. And that's as an undersized guy. And I went back and I watched him and I did kind of notice that he is more of a straight line athlete than a lateral athlete. And that, I mean, if he's going to be winning in the slot, I don't think that matters too much. But I was like you guys were saying, I was expecting like 4.5s, 40 and ran at 4.69. So I don't know what I don't know if that was an injury. I mean, he had like a knee injury, an ankle injury. I don't know if those were starting to catch up with him. I don't know if he was like trying to put on weight for his pro day and like try to be something that he's not. And he just got bad advice or he just had a bad day. I don't know what it was, but I think he's more athletic than his profile obviously was letting on. He's only 20 years old. He's an early declare. So I think that in the third round, I would be comfortable with him there. I think that just because of the pro day, I don't think you can draft him in the second round, but I think that he has a lot of potential still.
That's a good point, Hayden, about him kind of being a little bit more of a linear, vertical, stiff guy, because even with the ball in his hands, he would rather barrel into a defender or maybe hurdle him. He's not really a guy with a lot of shake and wiggle and kind of hip looseness, you know, in the open field. So I think that kind of checks out there.
To that point, he had 21 broken tackles on 105 catches in his career. So that there's something there. I'm hoping it was just a bad day. Who knows what it was? And I'm not losing faith in him, but I do think that that's why these pro days, these other things, depending on the trajectory of his career, it's a nice cross check. That's what these pro days and workouts can be. I just wish they had two of them this year instead of
And real quick, Josh, you know, there's bad days, there's upset stomachs, there's food poisonings. There's also guys with just bad technique. You know, it doesn't mean they're a poor athlete or can't change direction or can't sink their hips. Maybe they had a clunky start that adds, you know, a full 0.8 and things like that. That happens all the time. And a lot of these tests are so technique-based. Not saying there is one reason or any particular, but there just could be. And I think it's just important to always leave room for that kind of narrative.
Yep, 3 yards per route run against man coverage, one of the highest marks in this class. And that comment by Ben was sponsored by Pepto-Bismol. All right, now let's close the tight end group. Ben, any tight end on your mind for this one?
I would say Hunter Long out of Boston College, I think, is really intriguing. He's 6'5", 255, so he's checking the boxes size-wise. 82-inch wingspan, so he's got the length, he's got the wingspan. 5 drops on 133 career targets. He's got the reliable soft hands, can win in traffic. He's not a dynamic vertical threat. He's not a dynamic yak threat. This is a guy that led his team in receiving with a pro-style system under Steve Adazio, where they just handed the ball off to A.J. Dillon, and he won off play action. Then they bring in Halfley from Ohio State, and they spread it out. And he's still a productive receiver. I think he led a team in receptions. I think Zay Flowers led in yards, but still a productive receiver in 2 different schemes in that same mold of the Freiermuth, of the Kelce, of that ho-hum underneath intermediate tight end that is just going to be the QB's best friend. He's going to make that junk catch for you on 3rd and 6 for 7 yards over the middle of the field. He's a guy that you can trust the block. He can trust to erase tight ends in the run game. And that gives your scheme so much flexibility. This is why guys like Mercedes Lewis are coveted in Green Bay, why Lee Smiths are coveted around the league. They're not the sexiest tight ends. They're probably not on your fantasy teams, but they give your offense so much flexibility. And that's what Hunter Long can do for you with a little bit more pass game upside than probably the Lee Smiths or Mercedes Lewis's of the world. But Hunter Long, really good player.
Yeah, I think it was a great point just talking about the two different offenses. And he talked about this in his pro day interview where he got like all of the blocking techniques early on in his career. And then last year, he really got to excel out in space. And he kept winning on these little out routes all the time where you don't need to be super athletically gifted to win on those type of routes. It's kind of a technique route. And he has just enough separation skills and good hands to make do on those routes. I don't think he's going to be the crazy seam stretcher. I don't think he's going to be like a top 10 fantasy asset. But if you're talking about like a low ceiling starter that he can block on early downs, he can win on third downs, I think that Hunter Long fits that mold. Like, I think the narrative of like the big white tight end from college or Boston College, that like fits him perfectly to a T. So I think like somewhere in round 3 makes a lot of sense for him.
Yeah, 6'5", 254, had a nice 10-yard split, had a nice broad jump, an above-average athlete. So, I mean, with that mold, with that frame, with what we already see him able to do at the college level, like Ben said, I expect, you know, that NFL career to last at least until his second contract. Before we move on, any other tight ends anyone wants to talk about? Like, obviously, Kyle Pitts steals so many headlines at this group, and I'm so glad we spent so much time on him. There's, you know, Tommy Trimble. There's a few other names.
Yeah, I'll give you a 5-pack of an elevator speech real fast. I love Matt Bushman at BYU, and it's crazy that Zach Wilson has been on this meteoric rise this year without Matt Bushman, who tore his Achilles in the preseason. So coming off the Achilles, he's also 25 years old, but he's married to Chad Lewis's daughter. Former Eagles tight end, NFL tight end. So, you know, he's gotten a couple tips as far as winning the NFL. Like we talk about, though, the learning curve tight ends, Matt Bushman should be ready to play. A little bit older, a little bit more developed, really productive receiver for 3 years. Just heartbreaking. He tore his Achilles. If he was on the team with Zach Wilson this year, we're talking like a top 50 player, in my opinion. Wow. I think he would have been kind of side by side with his rise and probably would have had double digit touchdowns. Jacob Harris, Trey McKitty, they're my wild cards right now. Trey McKitty, the Florida State transfer over to Georgia, really not used in either offense, but an absolute freakish athletic specimen. He might be a guy that plays 25% as a rookie and has 8 touchdowns in the red zone. One of those kind of matchup guys. You just find a way to feature him on third down. Jacob Harris, he's the darling tester of the draft season, but he's got hands like feet, and that makes sense because he's a former soccer player. So I just get really worried about just his natural ability to catch the football. He's going to have to make his way on special teams, maybe even transition to more of a true tight end position as he really played a receiver position at UCF. But he's got good size. And like you had mentioned, Josh, we never talk about just the through and through blockers of the world. The Tommy Trembles, which have no problem blocking you off the field. He's my favorite H-back. Ben Mason at University of Michigan is my favorite fullback. He's a guy that's even played a little on the D-line, a lot like Patrick Ricard of the Baltimore Ravens.
Ben, do you think that Tommy Tremble could be a pass-catching guy? I thought he was athletic enough. He seemed very raw with his hands, and he kind of let the ball come into him. He would kind of like drop the ball every once in a while. But he's early declare. He's really young. He was basically the tight end two on like a very stacked depth chart over there. I'm kind of wondering if there's a little more juice to him long term. I think he's not going to be like a contributor as a pass catcher in like the first couple years. But it was kind of catching my eye how explosive of a player he was.
Yeah, and he's always been trumped on the Notre Dame pecking order with all these other tight ends. So whether it was Cole Nett last year, and then he was licking his chops in 2020, and this young kid, Michael Mayer, comes out of nowhere, yep. And he's the featured tight end. So Tommy Trimble, I love his floor. You know he's going to bring just that glass-eating mentality. He's a tough guy. I have a couple memory burns of some brutal drops from him. Yeah. So I completely agree with the unnatural hands, fights the ball a little bit. He's not going to be a matchup weapon. but he might be that guy that you throw that little dump off screen off play action to and let him go truck a defensive back. So he might be a guy that excels in the red zone, maybe in space a little bit, but he's going to get himself on the field with being a bona fide blocker.
So a little callback, he might be the one that we're talking about in 3 or 4 years on his second team that might be doing his best work on his second contract.
These are 20 to 24-year-old young adults. Could there be a more developing, turbulent time in their lives? All of these guys are going to change. And yep. That's the exciting thing. And, you know, everybody in scouting departments want to know, don't tell me who he is tomorrow. Tell me who he is in 3 years. Those are the good scouts.
Well, speaking of scouting departments, gentlemen, I have a challenge for you. I want you to win a Golden Globe today because what we're going to do is act like we are scouts in a draft room. And you hear about these fairy tales, and they're probably based in fact, in reality, of, you know, each scout getting one sticker each draft season and being able to put it next to one player card and say, hey, this is my guy, just to allow them to be noticed a little bit more in that, you know, whiteboards, those walls of player tags. And so we're going to get more than one. We're each going to get about two or three or four, depending on how deep you all want to go. But for lack of a better term, in its simplest form, these are quote unquote our guys, ones that really caught our eye. And you can be as detailed as you want. If you want to create a team in your head and how this player fills a specific hole, you can do that. Or it can just be what caught your eye generally about any of these players. So again, we'll go around the horn here. And Ben, since you're the guest, why don't we give you the first pick here? Why don't you go first?
Oh, I love the honor. I'm going to go with, and we can go any position, right? Not just
any position.
Oh, okay. We got the whole.
Just sell him to
here.
Us. Sell him to the general manager that's going to make this selection.
Well, we're
going to
go with big bad edge rusher from the ACC, particularly Wake Forest, Carlos Boogie Basham. This guy's had the third most pressures over the last three seasons, consistently productive getting after the quarterback. I'm out on finesse guys. I'm out on the runaround edge rushers. I want guys that will go through offensive linemen. And this guy is relentless. He's powerful, plays through contact as well as anybody in this draft class. He's long. He's explosive. Listen, he's a little stiff-hipped. He's probably not winning on speed rushes around tackles in the NFL. That's okay. I want guys that go from point A to point B, point to point to get the quarterback. And that's what Boogie Basham does. And when he doesn't, he plays to the echo of the whistle. He's a guy that will run all over the field chasing that ball carrier, and he gets there with authority. He's a guy I want in my locker room.
92nd percentile adjusted spark athleticism too. And like you were saying, it wasn't just the pressure rates, 18 tackles for loss. And when I'm doing my modeling, it's not the sack production that translates the most to the NFL. It's the tackles for loss production. And I think there is something to that about winning with power, especially with how quick the ball is coming out now. Like you would think that, oh, you need a speed rusher to win that. No, you need somebody that goes point A to point B with some power. So I think that you're going to start seeing some of these like Carlos Basham types kind of make some noise. And I was like you're saying about the stiff hits thing. I saw that too, but the 92nd percentile adjusted spark definitely is catching my eye. As somebody that could like really start to boom in the NFL.
Yeah, 6'3", 274. And while, yes, point A to point B is obviously the shortest distance, Ben, you can back me up on this. A lot of the converted sacks are also effort plays. They're also elongated plays. And to your point with what Boogie Basham brings, it's effort, effort, effort. And it doesn't matter if, you know, his primary move is stopped and then he gets backfield vision and he sees the quarterback escaping out the left side and wants to run across the line of scrimmage and chase after him. He has some great closing speed too. And I also feel like that surprising closing speed can be an element of when a quarterback thinks, oh, I've got a little extra moment, but I actually don't, and I'm getting taken down. I don't think he has that primary move that we can see successful over and over with some of the top pass rushers that we see in the NFL draft, but that secondary move combined with the effort that you guys are talking about, the size, I'm in as well. I definitely like this nomination, Ben.
And he's a guy that just, you can trust to play the run. So a guy that can play on early downs has that much more ability to get the sack production. You are allowed to throw the ball on first down, right? And this is my realization when Bradley Chubb came out a couple years ago and led the NFL rookies in sacks because he played more than everybody else. Why? Because he was a productive early down run defender. So he was on the field more and gave him more opportunities to get production off play action and things like that. You don't have to just wait till third down to throw the ball. But in order to play on early downs, you better be good in both phases. And that's what Boogie Basham does.
And you talked about speed rushers. What we see with them, at least used to a lot, was that they just run the loop, right? They'd run the hoop and just get carried away from the quarterback in the pocket with their offensive tackle. And what Basham does so well, he gets pocket depth and then cuts inside and tries to get his production that way. And to me, that's really, really important.
Just the worst place in football is behind the quarterback.
Right.
Worst place in football.
Let's continue this pass rushing trend. And I want to nominate my guy. And let's get a little sentimental here, okay? Back in 2012, Hayden Winks couldn't even go see an R-rated movie. But Josh Norris was watching prospects who weren't even invited to the Senior Bowl. And one of my best early calls, Malik Jackson, coming out of Tennessee. I believe he went on to go as like a fourth or fifth round pick. But I just remember watching him at Tennessee, a USC transfer, and just loving what I watched and not understanding. I had no background to base it on. But I was like, there's something there. And what has Malik Jackson gone on to do? Become an outstanding player who got paid a boatload of money by the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Philadelphia Eagles. I am certain there's another Malik Jackson in this class, and his name is Milton Williams coming out of Louisiana Tech. And look, he might not be Josh Chapman in the run game to have another callback here, but he doesn't get obliterated in the running game either. He has an anchor there, but what he does bring is unusual movement as a pass rusher. He can bend at the ankles, at the knees, and work around these heavy-footed, stiff offensive guards and creates these angles that a lot of other interior pass rushers do not get. And talking about straight points A to B, well, that goes straight to my heart when interior defensive linemen can do that. And Milton Williams is someone who I'm going to have as a top 20, top 25 prospect in this class because he's my type and he fits all my biases.
I mean, 99th percentile adjusted spark athleticism, Josh. I mean,
doesn't hurt.
Doesn't get much better than that. 38.5-inch vert at 284 pounds. I mean, that is insane. And like we were talking about earlier, 74th percentile tackles for loss among defensive tackles as well. And that's what really translates. That's meaning you're winning on early downs against the run. You're also explosive enough to get upfield against the pass, too. So I can see it. I don't think I've ever seen him in a round one mock draft before, but there's definitely a ceiling to chase here.
Long, sudden, explosive. That's a dangerous trio right there.
Yeah. I mean, he attacks the shoulders. He attacks the edges. He attacks the angles of all these guys. Any concern, Ben, or are we past this? We're at, oh, he's at 284 pounds. What do we do with him? I just feel like what you do with him is you allow him to create disruption, and that ultimately ends in production.
Well, in the fall, that was one of the biggest questions around him because he really played this past season at about 260.
Oh.
And really had to wear some tough hats for his team playing on the inside as they had a couple opt-outs and the roster got kind of decimated. And then he had to figure out, do you want to lose weight and be an edge or gain weight and be a through-and-through three tech? And he put on 10, 15 pounds of good weight in the offseason. And everybody said, we know what you want to be, and you're going to be a three tech at the next level. But having those hybrid guys or – you could call them a tweener, too. If they're a hybrid, I like them. If they're a tweener, I don't like them. That's what I usually categorize them as. But it's always important to know what they were played at and what they were asked to do, because there were some plays where he played three tech and he looked a little light, where he got blasted off the ball against double teams. So there's always a little bit of context to fill in there. But sitting at 285, and he tested like that, Hayden, at 285, just checking all the boxes, in my opinion.
And I think that experience is great for him. Like, I saw other double teams where he held ground and allowed other people to make plays, too. So, I mean, I'm all in, as you can tell. I'm absolutely all in. All right, Hayden, you're up.
We're going to stick with a very similar player to the two prior. And this is Joseph Asai, the weak side defensive end at Texas. 21-year-old early declare, 90th percentile adjusted spark athleticism. We're talking 41.5-inch vertical at 256 pounds. And what's crazy about his story is he played off ball as a sophomore and he made 90 tackles playing linebacker for Texas. And then he gained some weight, I believe. And then he was basically just an every down edge rusher. And he had 15.5 tackles for loss in 9 games. He was very disruptive. And then most of it was just as a pursuit player, just winning with athleticism. Because his biggest weaknesses right now are the biggest one by far, and this is just probably because he's so new to the position. He is always so late off the ball. He's so raw, but if I'm trying to find a day two developmental player, I want him to be an early declare. I want him to be young. I want him to have some production already, and I want athleticism. And Osai checks all of those boxes. So I don't think he's going to be polished enough to give you too much juice as a rookie. But I think that if you can figure out how to get him off the ball quicker, if you can teach him some pass rushing moves, I think that there's a big ceiling to chase here because he's just so raw to the position. I think that he's probably being overlooked just because he doesn't look as polished as some of these other like top 10 edge rushers. But the ceiling is just like so obvious to me.
You know, Hayden, somebody that was also raw coming out and I think is going to go in a similar ballpark, but you just kind of saw the tools. You knew he just needed a couple years, was Za'Darius Smith out of Kentucky.
Yeah,
and he's very similar type of height, weight, speed type of prospect with similar rawness. But you love just his baseline traits. He plays to the echo of the whistle, hustles all over the field, can kind of play in some three tech positions too, isolate him against guards. You see the quick footed nature when he does get off the ball or chasing plays out to the numbers, or he'll even run the hoop and just keep running and chase plays wherever he needs to. He just needs those go-to moves. He needs to get more functional and technical with his hand usage. I don't think he's going to be a runaround type. I don't think he's going to be a blast through you type, just like Za'Darius is with the Packers. Very technical hand usage, all sorts of club rips, club swims, different type of rip moves to get into gaps. So he's a guy that I think is a little raw right now, but has some good experience and can still develop.
Ben, I don't know if I've ever had this conversation with you. I've had it a lot with our friend, mutual friend, Fran Duffy. But the longer I do this, the more I truly believe in athleticism and the importance along the defensive line with these pass rushers, because it truly is at times one of the only individual matchups on an NFL field. There aren't a lot of those. I mean, we talk about all the time. It's, you know, 11 on 11, constant movement and people reacting to it. But when you get, you know, either an interior guy against a guard or center, or you get an edge guy against a tackle, just simply put, having a great athletic profile gives you a natural advantage in these situations. And while we talked about how effort and movement, closing speed can also equal production, and while there's also some major technical elements, to me, the most important parts and like what when I really go all in on a player is when both of those match. Like when he's a fantastic athlete with also some technical ability to win with his primary pass rushing move. Those are rare. Those are difficult to find. But if you have someone who's just a technician who then tests as like a poor athlete, as a bad athlete, I am highly skeptical of those because we've seen a lot of productive players come out of the college level that seem to have that technical aspect figured out. And then they get the NFL and they're just not the caliber of athlete that everyone else is around them.
Well, the tough thing is there's 64 starting edges every Sunday in the NFL and they can't all be the perfect edge.
Yeah.
So it's really deciding where you want to allocate your resources. And what I mean by resources are traits, and saying, what are we okay with? Do we want the stronger player that maybe lacks the twitch and the athleticism, or maybe the undersized player that can beat this guy with speed and agility? So it's trying to find that best matchup to get the job done. And just remembering, not everybody is a perfect prospect. So you have to kind of hedge your bet and pick and choose your battle. And we talk about this a lot with tackles this time of year, where everybody wants to find that perfect tackle. There's 64 starting tackles. None of them are perfect. So you have to be able to survive with what you have as well and understand, hey, they don't have this ability, but it's going to make up for it here. And kind of just tilting those scales of justice are all about finding usage and putting these guys in positions to be successful. If I could have two perfect prospect edge rushers, great, find me two of those, but I don't think they exist.
Browns are trying to do it this year, but
right,
we know that Clowney hasn't been productive. Hayden, anything you want to add to that, just the importance of athleticism with these pass rushers?
Well, yeah, I would just say that looking at athleticism as like just like the NFL in general, is it's too complicated. You have to look at it by positions. And something I'm doing with my models is like even breaking down within positions. Like the perfect example for that would be at wide receiver. And just like, I don't want to create an athleticism metric for wide receiver because Julio Jones is winning way differently than like Wes Welker was winning. And you see the different types of traits that these type of players need. So I think that these some of these composite scores that we reference, I think we can get more granular with that and like look for the specific traits for like slot receivers. That would be like the three cone. When it's like an outside guy, it's like the broad jump, the vertical jump. So I think that we have to become a little bit more practical with what athletic traits we're looking for. And like the last example was like running backs. I don't like how like the bench press is like such a big part of the Spark formula. And like Alex Barnes was a running back. I'm not even sure if he even cracked an active roster. He had like this insane bench press marks. And he was like a 99th percentile adjusted Spark athlete. But if you looked at his speed, his agility drills, they weren't nearly at those marks. So I think we need to be a little bit more pick and choose which athletic traits we're actually searching for.
I think those short arms of his put up like 34 reps.
Yeah.
I don't think, and I love athletic testing. You know, it's part of my process, but you do have to be selective with it. And it can't just be blanketly used at every single position the same way. And these one-on-one matchups, to me, it absolutely, especially with pass rushers, can be a differentiator. All right, Ben, you're back up again. You have another sticker in your hand. You're going to put it on.
We're going to stay in the trenches here. One of my favorite prospects of this class is Osa Odighizuwa out of UCLA. Very interesting player because he's kind of an undersized guy to be playing the positions that he does. And I think he was one of the few, if not only, at the Senior Bowl to play nose tackle, one tech, three tech, and off the edge. He was just running in and out of reps wherever he can get them. But he's about 6'3", 280, can play up and down the line with a prolific wrestling background. State champion wrestler for a couple years out of the state of Oregon. I love guys that understand proper hand placement, leverage, hip sync. And he absolutely loves the fact he thinks he has the best get off and first step in the class. So he's able to get off the ball first, which allows him to have that hand placement first. And he plays so much underneath these players. You can watch him at the Senior Bowl drive big Aaron Banks back 5-10 yards on a bull rush. Aaron Banks outweighs him by 50 pounds. But you have the proper leverage and hand placement. You could beat guys that are bigger than you. Oh, yeah, not to mention he's got some looseness getting after the passer too. And he can have some spin moves and shoot into gaps. He's got some flexibility up and down the line. Good run pass player. He's checking a lot of boxes, in my opinion, and I do a lot of stuff for the Packers, whether it's Mike Daniels out of Iowa, wrestling background, Kenny Clark out of UCLA, a big wrestling background, Osa Odighizuwa. I'd be shocked if he wasn't on their radar.
I like that a lot. He has those slippery moments that you're talking about. He can also press you back like you're talking about. I mean, if you combine burst, a little bit of bend, and effort's another one. I think we're finding your type here, Ben. Then you're going to play at some point in the NFL, and you're going to play for a while. I like that a lot. And I also remember his brother, Owa Odighizuwa, who, personal favorite of mine, looked like a great athletic edge rusher. I think he also went to UCLA, right, Ben?
Yep.
He just ran into a boatload of injuries with the Giants. It never worked out. I think he was a second-round pick for them, if I'm not mistaken. So definitely hoping Osa has a better career. And it's interesting that he is playing a slightly different position as well.
Yeah, he's a really good player. Had a good week down at the Senior Bowl. He's productive. He's checking a lot of boxes in kind of a very lukewarm interior defensive tackle class.
Yeah.
Where, you know, whether it's him or Levi Onwuzurike, Barmore, Davion Nixon, really trying to figure out who's going to go in the top 50. Osa could squeeze in early second round.
All right. I will go next. Let's go full circle here. We opened the conversation with Kyle Pitts. Who's going to cover Kyle Pitts, right? I also refer back to my conversation on the episode one of the show with Charles Robinson. While he was exiting training camps and having those conversations with teams last year, they all said, well, I really need, you know, a box defender who can turn and run with tight ends because we have no one that can do it after our starters on our roster. And then in this year's class, you can find one. And he's a box player with somewhat uncommon size, but maybe new size at that position. And it's Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa out of Notre Dame. I mean, he plays with outstanding aggression and exceptional closing speed. Like you had like your Jeremy Chinn last year, who was kind of more of a safety coming out. I think it was Southern Illinois, but had a great rookie season as that hybrid safety linebacker. Maybe JOK is closer to like that slot corner linebacker development. But again, he's comfortable in phase. He keeps a hand on that vertical receiver, like tracking the ball. He did that against Pitt where he would put his hand on the wide receiver and then just watch the ball come in and then turned and caught it like he was. And that's just uncommon. That's uncommon no matter the position that you see at the college level. And then Ben, you posted this ridiculous play against Virginia Tech back in back in February, where he was, you know, sticking in motion with the wide receiver, and then the ball snapped instantly, and then he tracked the tight end up the field and came down with the football. I mean, you just don't see these types of plays at the college level.
Yeah, he's a really interesting prospect, but he is a through and through safety, in my opinion. He played out in space for the most part at Notre Dame. That's where he got the best production. It's a sub-package league in the NFL. The small, undersized corner nickelback is a dying breed. Everybody wants the big safety, which means three safeties on the field, but you better have some coverage ability. You got to be able to stick your nose in the run. You better be able to blitz. You better be able to cover a slot, a tight end, whoever's over number two in the slot. I think that's a really coveted position. I'm not the one that's willing to say, you're a big safety, go play Will. Oh, you're an undersized edge? Go play Will. That's not how it works. These players that play what I call halfway players, you play out in space, detached from the formation. You're typically over the slot. You're not accounted for in the run game. So a lot of times you read run, you get a free shot to go insert into the box and blast the running back. Whether the, you know, Darren Lee, I have dozens of plays of Darren Lee doing that. And it's become a realization to say, this play does nothing for me. This tells me nothing about the player. Darren Lee ran 4.4, 235, and couldn't play a lick at Will linebacker. You can't let the Will linebacker be a catch-all for awkward positions. I think JOK is a safety, and that's okay. There's a place for it. He's going to play every down, and I could get the most usage when he's a little bit more of a country player than a city player, and that's what we call players that we want in space versus guys we want in tight quarters. So the, you know, the city players we want in the box, the country players we want out in open pastures. He's an open pasture player.
What is like the difference between, I haven't watched him yet, between him like Isaiah Simmons, just in general? And like, are we just going to keep seeing more of these guys pop up?
Yeah, Isaiah Simmons is a very comparable player for their lack of true positional fit. Another guy that played down in the box, but was really more of a safety prospect. And a lot of people wanted to make Isaiah Simmons a safety at the next level. Kind of dabbled there a little bit with the Cardinals and couldn't really get on the field as a rookie. I think he also battled some injuries as well. But I think Owusu-Koramoah has a little bit more natural football ability to him. I think he's just a little bit more of a tougher player, a little bit more of an explosive player. I think Isaiah was a little bit more of a finesse back end player with really good size that people said, oh, you're Deion Buchanan, go play linebacker, as opposed to just being a big rangy safety on the back end. So I think JOK may look the part more of a linebacker, but we're going to keep him out in space, in my opinion.
Yeah, interesting. He only had two free safety snaps last season. I think 212, this is according to PFF, at linebacker, slot corner around 331, and then like attached to the defensive line at 88. I just loved how he flew around the football, and like you saying, oh, they're not accounting for the running game, so they get a free hit and like a free lane towards the running back, and they can make – I mean, he's a missile.
Oh, he lets you know when he gets there, believe me. Yeah, when he's free and gets like 10 yards head of steam, he lets you know when he arrives.
And I guess what I saw too was just that comfort in that open space that you're talking about, that the awareness, the game slows down for him in that area. And I just – I loved Jeremy Chinn last year, and you know, he played a lot of linebacker, it felt like, last season too, but – It is absolutely going to be up to whatever.
You know, team he played a lot of linebacker, and the Panthers are sitting here saying, sheesh, we could really use a traditional linebacker instead of moving Shaq Thompson to Mike and making Jeremy Chinn this safety Will player. Yeah. He kind of struggled on the second level. Chinn made a ton of tackles, but between the two of them, they didn't know what they were looking at and couldn't get lined up. So I know the Panthers are sitting here this offseason saying, can we find more of a true Mike to kind of run the defense?
And they did that. Denzel Perryman.
No
that
question.
One of their first signings of the offseason. All right, Hayden, your sticker goes to?
Well, this is a developmental project, and we'll roll the dice in round four. And I'm going to go with Jacob Harris, and we briefly mentioned him early. And if he's going to be drafted as a wide receiver, I don't have that much interest just because he's so raw. But if we're looking for tight ends that actually are difference makers, I can possibly see that end up happening with Jacob Harris. He had the best adjusted spark score of any tight end in my database, 4.440. 40.5-inch vertical jump. His three cone was at 6.5 seconds. That is outstanding. He's very new to the sport and to the position. He mostly played outside and in the slot. I would be kind of curious if he can put on 10 pounds and then just be like a Mike Gesicki, where he's just in the slot, but he's a tight end, and just see if he can win in the red zone. And I think that he has enough juice to win on first down in the middle of the field too. So he had 8 touchdowns. He averaged over like 14 yards per reception, at UCF. So you don't really see these type of athletic profiles on day three too often. And I think at the tight end position, if you're just trying to roll the dice and maybe you get a pass catching weapon, I think Jacob Harris at least has a shot.
Yeah, traits, traits, traits. That's what you go for on day three. You roll the dice on traits, and he's got plenty of them.
Does he have to gain 25, 30 pounds?
I don't know if it's imperative, but this guy better love running down on kickoff, because that's how he's going to keep his nameplate on his locker for a year or two while he's developing, which he was a four-core special teams member, I think, in 2018, and then really hasn't done it the past 2 years, which is a little concerning. But he's going to have to be a four-core guy with a smile on his face.
Ben, one more. Who you got?
I'm going to go double dip really fast here, and they're from the same team, and they're the same kind of mold, and that's John Bates, tight end out of Boise State. A corner, Avery Williams out of Boise State. John Bates is an athletic freak, a prolific track and field guy in high school, all sorts of hurdles and sprints and things. Special team stalwart at Boise State, really good blocker, just wasn't featured in the pass game. So, you know, when we study these players, you immediately go to his stats and production and say, oh, he doesn't have hands or he can't separate. He just wasn't featured in the offense. I think he's a guy that can have his best days ahead of him. I thought he looked pretty good down at the Senior Bowl. He was a late call-in and looked pretty good. Avery Williams, another guy, has played corner, has played special teams, has played nickel, has played safety, prolific returner. I think he has 8 return touchdowns. That's not what impresses me. He's got 3 block kicks as well. He's a guy that loves special teams. He's a guy that said, I want to be Matthew Slater. Who says that in college football? I want this guy on my team. Not to mention, he's a little small. He's like 5'9", 195. But he looks like he's wearing an umpire's chest under there. He's got a thick core. He will stick his nose in the run game. He is a tough little spark plug. So John Bates out of Boise, Avery Williams out of Boise. Give me those guys.
Ben, one of my favorite things that you do each year is make a list of all the guys that have slot experience or you expect to play in the slot on the defensive side of the ball. And I'm sure I'll look for his name as we go along here these next 2 weeks. All right, I'll do a double dip too real quick. I like both Iowa wide receivers. I know Amir Smith-Marset is getting a little more love, which makes sense. I mean, he is, I think, maybe one of the few wide receivers in this class that you can line him up, isolate on the outside, and has that kind of like basketball ISO movement and that wiggle, that finesse to break off his route at any point and leave the cornerback scrambling a little bit. Now he's also around 180 pounds, 184 pounds. So like any contact, he's going down, but he also has return capabilities. And we've seen that translate to production in the NFL as well. But I also want to give a shout out to his teammate, Brandon Smith. Just quickly, he's super sudden, has great hops, and he has that spectacular catch trait. And I haven't seen anyone mention him. And so he has that area where he wins, and maybe that's something he can latch on to. And I'll throw out one name quickly, just because we talk about unusual, uncommon areas of prospects. So I need to give a small platform for Josh Ematerbebe coming out of Illinois, who posted a 46.5-inch vertical jump. If any of you out there are listening after this episode, go and search even for his high school testing on YouTube, and you see him literally be a helicopter when he jumps up into the air, swing his arms. It's like it was edited in some film, because he freezes. He pauses at the top, at the peak of his jump. I have never seen it before. When I've never seen something, Hayden, I have to talk about it. He's not productive, but he's big, outside wide receiver who can. And so I want to give him a little love here.
I comped him to David Blaine, street magician, just how he could levitate up in the air. The problem is like, I think David Blaine probably has like the same refinement as like a route runner. I watched the Wisconsin game because I want to like this guy. He went to USC for a minute. He's a leaper. That's all he is right now.
He reminds me a lot of Donovan Peoples-Jones. Yeah. From his college career and kind of his stock as a prospect. And the way Donovan really carved out a nice role as a 6th or 7th round pick. And he was that isolated receiver in 22 personnel for the Browns. So they'll come out in these big run looks and let him be the deep threat or the red zone guy or the double move guy. You can definitely see whether it's Josh Ematerbebe or maybe a Josh Palmer out of Tennessee, high trait guy, definitely on day 3.
Look, let's just get Josh Ematerbebe drafted. That's all I'm asking for. Let's just get, because he does have some moments where you see, I mean, that Illinois quarterback was absolutely dreadful. And the ball was thrown up and he obviously was in tight coverage, but he went up and got it. He went up and I think it was an Iowa game. He won back-to-back snaps. Look, I'm not going to put him up high in this wide receiver group, but there were some moments there where I'm like, okay, let's at least get him on an NFL team.
You know, he has a brother that's currently on his fourth Division I team.
Yeah.
I think Daniel Immature Baby, who started at Florida, then went to USC with Josh, then went to Illinois with Josh. And now he's still in college football. He just went to Kansas State. I'm not really sure how this is legal, but Immerse Miss Marcette out of Iowa. I'm glad you brought him up.
Yeah.
I swear after 2019, I thought he was very similar to Ted Ginn. And if he had a quarterback that force-fed him the ball like they did at Ohio State to Ted Ginn and didn't have Nate Stanley throwing him into the third row, we'd be talking about a day two player. But this guy oozes explosiveness, and he fits the NFL game. So if teams like the Niners and Packers and Rams with those manufactured touch RPOs, if they don't get the Rondell Moores and Tonys and Elijah Moores, that next wave – Immerse Smith Marset is all over that. And he's a guy that Iowa said, you know what? Our quarterbacks can't hit you. Just run a jet sweep and we'll hand it to you. And that was some of his best offense at Iowa.
Nice. Hayden, anyone else you want to close with? Or do we hit all the names that you want to talk about?
No, but I do want to promote that we will have, I'm going to have some rankings up on the site that has not been unleashed quite yet with Underdog, but I'm going to have all these guys deep. I have John Bates written up and we have like 15 tight ends. Like I'm going to have probably like 30 wide receivers all written up. So that's going to be coming up probably in the next week or so.
Yeah. And I'll be grinding a lot this weekend and finally writing up prospects. I've been watching a whole bunch. Still have a whole lot of defensive players to go to, by the way. Ben, Derek Barnes, a little bit of a fun player coming out of Purdue. Like I bet when Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick watch them some Derek Barnes as the second level thumper at linebacker. And then also rushing the passer, off the edge on third downs rather than working in coverage. Maybe some traditional Bill and Patricia will like him a little bit.
Yeah, he's a guy, again, you're not finding finesse on his report anywhere. No. He's a guy that's explosive, strong, with super long arms. He has some of the most fun tape, whether it's off ball or off the edge, where he has no problem going right through a guy's face. Really, really productive player. But Josh, it's mid-April right now. If you're not writing up 2022 guys at this point, you're behind.
Ben, I was unemployed there for about a month or two, and I took that unemployment to heart a little bit and didn't watch too many. I'm regretting that a little bit now, but I'm in catch-up mode.
I remember you saying you were getting out of football, so you asked me to come on the show. I thought we were talking politics or something today. I didn't know what the conversation was going to be.
Ben, the break was good for me. A little break's always healthy. I was going to let you promote anything on your way out. I'll still let you do that, Ben. Anything you want to say? I mean, on Twitter, you're just absolutely amazing. It's Ben Fennell_NFL. I know you do some work with obviously Fran and the Eagles and all that kind of stuff. Please tell people about it.
Twitter is just for my mom, so she knows what I'm doing during the day, but you guys can read the tweets as well. But this time of year, I'm here at NFL Films working on coverage for the NFL Network. So the Senior Bowl, unfortunately no combine, but our pro day coverage just ended. Path of the Draft is on nightly at NFL Network. And a lot of this is leading up to our draft coverage, which I'll be out in Cleveland, I guess, a little under 2 weeks at this point. Working alongside Daniel Jeremiah and Kurt Warner, a lot of our analysts out there. And then the second, take a little time in the summer to do some golfing. And then I'll be back with the Eagles media department, the Athletic Wisconsin, doing some Packers film breakdowns. And hopefully back on the road with ESPN College Football next season. But new times, kind of ahead in this country.
Well, and Ben, I know you always take like one massive trip every offseason that obviously was not possible last offseason.
I kind of dialed that back over the past couple of years. I turned 30. I didn't have a dog or a wife, so I got the private golf membership. So that kind of took the place of some of the trips. I did a trip to South Africa and some Euro trips like that previously. Definitely getting the travel itch as I didn't go anywhere last summer. I'm not sure if there's anything lined up quite yet. I might just be working on the tour card this summer.
There you go. There you go. All right, Ben, thanks so much for doing this. Everyone out there, thank you all for listening. We'll be back up with a really, really fun episode. Hopefully it's on Tuesday. We might have to push it to Wednesday just for some production elements, but I'm really excited. Just a handful of more episodes before the 2021 NFL draft. I'll be working. I know Hayden will as well. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Up the Villa. Talk to y'all soon. See ya.